Blog Talk Radio.
Level the playing field. Tim Horton, white ribbon, tackles the toilet tackle.
Wow.
The wow tonight is we always talk about how wonderful the Toronto Argonauts and CFL teams are in their community, how they share their time and their resources to assist in various ways in the community. The bullying program led by Joe Appel. We've got tonight we'll be talking to Jason Pottinger about tackles for toilets. As funny as that sounds, it actually is a very helpful and good thing. In Kenya, schools are being shut down because of inappropriate latrines, and the money goes towards latrines. Jason will be telling us all about how we can support African schools that are in trouble and that need to stay open, but to stay open, they need latrines. We all know that Pinball Clemens works towards building schools in Africa, but also there are schools that are open, could use a little assistance to ensure that they can stay open. We'll discuss that tonight. As well, we'll be talking to Swayze Waters, who will tell us about what it was like to be a young football player. And, of course, being on the sidelines for 9 weeks, the hope and aspiration of finally getting back on the field happened this past week in that victory against Saskatchewan. Good for Swayze. The White Ribbon Campaign, it's an Argonaut initiative with MP Stella Ambler there, Todd Minterson. He'll discuss violence against women and violence in general towards people. Joe Appel adds his two cents, and he's been working hard and diligently over the years on the bullying program going around to schools in Southern Ontario in the greater metro area and discussing bullying even from his perspective where he was bullied and as a bully himself, how to identify you are and how to change your attitude. That's very important. And as we said, tackles for toilets, and that helps Kenya schools stay open. And there's a Freudian slip that really needs to stop for me today. I've been saying that all day. Coach Scott Milanovic, his daily scrum, he had some important things to discuss. And appropriate anger, since today is the subject, I thought, just as an antithesis or an opposite or something running on two tracks. You have controlled violence. That's what football is. And can players use that to their advantage? Some players don't like to think of it as being violent. And that's okay with me. I mean, you know, just want to understand how you want to literally throw another guy on the ground, hit him hard. That's the objective in football. And, you all know what you're in for, and that's what the game's all about. So that's what we'll be talking about today. If you'd like to make a contribution as far as a verbal one, you can do so by calling at 714-242-5250. You can also use Skype, and it requires a momentary membership, sort of, I don't know, becoming a member somehow. There's no cost attached, but then you'll get onto the program and you'll be able to add your two cents. If you don't want to call LA and you know, basically end up with a long distance charge, that's no problem. I can call you from our studio, and all you have to do is just go on my Facebook, Candid Frank Live. Once you type that in, Stanisha should come in right behind it. And you can message me, whether you are a friend of mine or not. You know you can message me. You can become a friend of mine if you wish. I'd more than be glad to befriend you. And that's Candid Frank Live. Type those three words in, and then it'll be Stanisha, which right now you're not really sure about how to spell that unless you've spelt it before. And you will recognize it once you see it. And it's a lot like a name of a young lady on TSN. Her name is Stanisiewski. And she's got the Zuski parts in the middle there of my name in there. She sort of got it the last. Our name ends with a vowel, and so does hers, but all these other letters from the second last up to whatever. Anyway, so basically that's what I'm hoping you'll do today. I hope you'll pay attention to what we're talking about today. In life, there are a lot of things that happen that you know, give one the impression that life is a bowl of crap. Let's be honest. People end up hurt in many ways, and sometimes we can stop it. And, you know, you'd be surprised how the obvious is not obvious. Just to state the point of how obvious helping people is and how people are willing to help. And the irony of not noticing or understanding the same thing, not for the political reasons, but just imagine. We're talking today about a country that poisoned some 1,400 citizens, 400 of which were children. We're talking about going into that country and bombing them. We're talking about all these wonderful things that we do because we feel we have an obligation to protect the world, being America, and then, of course, Canada following suit. And yet, people die like they did at the Naval Yard, 10 innocent people or 11 innocent people plus, or it's 12 now, it was 13 altogether, wasn't it, at the end. And yet, nobody talks about how they can stop that from happening. I don't understand the disconnect. I don't know about you. And it's the same thing for, you know, abuse. It's exactly the same thing. The result is the same, where someone is being mistreated, someone is being hurt, sometimes even killed, and we don't understand or know that we have a contribution we can make to help make their lives better. Well, the Toronto Argonauts, in not a political sense, just in a community-oriented sense, as do, and I want to keep reminding people of this, just because we talk about the Argos here doesn't mean that we think the Argos are the only team in the CFL that does this kind of stuff. Every team in the CFL does this kind of stuff. It is peculiar to the CFL in the sense that when you consider the financial magnitude of the CFL and compare it to the contribution they make, you know, in the public, I think it's a pretty good ratio. A mighty fine ratio, you know. Of course, people like the Maple Leafs can afford to make prettier noises and do prettier things that seem prettier and all that kind of stuff. But when you really get down to it, what kind of help are you really giving? Well, with the Argonauts, their hope, and we applaud, as fans of the Argonauts, we applaud the contribution that they make in our community. As other, I keep saying this because I want to make this clear. This isn't about just the Argonauts. This is about the Calgary Stampeders, the Edmonton Eskimos, the Saskatchewan Roughriders, the BC Lions. In fact, one of the things we're talking about here, and that's what I learned in discussions with the owner of the Argonauts, Mr. Braley, the White Ribbon Campaign is something that really had its start in BC, and he brought it here for his team here in Toronto to pursue helping. And it's a great campaign, and it's the White Ribbon Campaign, and right now it's just been, it's in its inception here, and soon we'll be talking to the people involved in as far as where they're at once they get rolling. They're not rolling right now. They might be rolling right about now, actually. I think it's about time that they should be starting to get some stuff going where they can be more out there promoting and helping people to understand that violence against women is not good. And violence against other people is not good. And it's important that people who were violent against women or violent at points in their lives, to help the overall good of people to understand that you can live a life having been there, turn your back on it, and become a better person and move forward in your life. And also realize there's no shame in making that mistake in life. You know, we all make mistakes. The idea is in life, I think, you can have your own opinion, you're entitled to it. The idea of life is that we all make mistakes. It's after we make mistakes, that's what defines us, that's what makes us who we are. Admitting one makes a mistake is the first step in making sure we don't repeat that mistake. Acknowledgement of error is a way to make yourself better. And that's why I really enjoy, and I really do adore, the Toronto Argonauts, the players, the organization, and even though that sounds a little corny a word, but it's true. They deserve adoration for doing this kind of stuff because it does require a lot of dedication and it does require opening a door for other people when maybe you could be thinking about other things, like selling tickets because you're not overselling your tickets. Now, so that's what we're talking about today. It is a special care of mine. I don't stand alone in having frustrations in our lives. Each one of us has at a time had difficulty dealing with life. And the good news is that if you are lucky enough to be aware that you're having a problem, whether it's a problem that you're putting on someone else, or whether the problem is one that you're putting on yourself, or one that you're putting on others, it's good to know what's happening, because at that point you can have a chance to deal with it and defeat it and become a better person. So that's what today's show is about. It's about contributions made by our football team here locally that's done in every other city in the CFL. I mentioned all the Western cities, and shame on me if I don't mention Hamilton, Montreal, and soon to be in the West, Winnipeg, and soon to be in the league, Ottawa. So all these CFL teams, it's part of what the CFL promotes. It's about being community conscious and being out there in the community, doing their part in letting people know that they care about what's going on in their community, because they are not only people looking to do business in our community, they're also wanting to make a decent contribution to our city. So for that, this is more or less a day in looking into what the Argos do in the community, and we hope you enjoy the program. And most of all, I hope you give us a call, 714-242-5250, and tell us how you feel about some of these things and whether, you know, how supportive you are of it. And in fact, even if you think there's a comment that you should make based on what you think is going on. So we'll take a short break. We'll be back after this. This guy's hurt, but he's still a good player.
Travis Lule.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I love this guy.
He's real.
You know you like him.
Loves the outdoors.
He's out there, all out, every game.
You gotta like that.
Look at him.
Always looking to land the big catch.
He's after it.
Articulate.
He's a winner.
Champion.
He's got a great cup.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, you gotta love this guy.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards in the morning, TSN 1050.
1, 2, 3. We're the Argos cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
We're the Argos cheerleaders,
and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Woo. Go Frank! Go Frank! Go Frank!
There you go, Frank. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you, sis. Hey, Argo lifers, Argo fans, the Toronto Argonauts fan cruise is on the horizon. 7-night Eastern Caribbean cruise, February 1st through 8th. Argo fans, do you want to live it up? The ultimate cruise party on the high seas may be just what you need. Join reigning CFL Coach of the Year Scott Milanovic, the Grey Cup winning quarterback Ricky Ray, and members of the 2013 Argos cheerleaders on a 7-night voyage to some of the most exotic destinations in the Caribbean. Join the fun as we kick off the Argos Fan Cruise Week in Miami, Florida, with an action-packed tailgate party, including your newest friends. The party continues on board the Celebrity Reflection with exclusive events throughout the week that will have everyone talking. There is no better way than to spend the week by soaking up the sun, enjoying fine cuisine, hitting up the gym or spa, or simply partying the night away. Get ready to put your game face on and join the fun. For more information on pricing or to book, please call 416-929-1980, 416-929-1980, or toll-free 1-877-510-2751. That's 1-877-510-2751. Book early, because this is one huddle you can be a part of with the Toronto Argonauts. After four failed attempts, 64-year-old Canadian endurance swimmer Diane Nyad is the first to swim across the 160-kilometer Florida Strait from Cuba to Florida in just 53 hours without a shark tank. Right after reaching the shore of Key West, this is what our hero Diane Nyad had to say, swollen lips and all.
I got three messages. One is, we should never, ever give up.
Okay.
Two is, you're never too old to chase your dreams.
That's right.
Three is, it looks like a solitary sport, but it's a team.
That's something to remember when it comes to many things in life. Individually, no one can really accomplish anything on their own. The important thing that one needs is to have help, to have a contribution, to have people around them to help attain the goal that they're trying to reach. In this case, also we talked about a vacation to be able to go on with the Argos. And truthfully, that would be a lot of fun, don't you think? That all happens in February. Which leads us to a guy who had 9 weeks of vacation he'd have preferred not to have. And, not that Prefontaine was doing a horrible job, because he wasn't doing a horrible job. But still, he wasn't the regular kicker for the Toronto Argonauts. So for 9 weeks, they had, realistically, a backup quarterback, that backup quarterback being Prefontaine. Well, Swayze Waters spent 9 weeks on the sidelines, much like a vacation, a forced vacation, one that he didn't want to take, and one that must have been very frustrating. So I had a chance to talk to him today and asked him about the whole thing and also about his youth football experience. Today, that's the subject, youth football. Yeah, but we still can talk about the Argos and how they're doing. With Swayze Waters, sitting on the sidelines for a kicker is something that you're accustomed to. But not for such a prolonged and protracted period, huh?
Yeah, it's been a long 9 games, that's for sure.
Now, how are you feeling?
Feel good, it's obviously coming off an injury like I had. There's going to be some sorenesses and stuff like that I'm just going to have to work through. But overall, I feel great, and everybody's done a good job of getting me to where I need to be, so I'm excited.
Now, you're ready to get back on the field. What have you learned while you're off the field? Are there any insights that you picked up? Sitting on the sidelines, standing on the sidelines, watching from a distance?
I don't know if anything that I've learned from watching, but just throughout the whole process, just it's given me a chance to kind of get back to the basics, because after my injury, I had a period of time where I wasn't kicking at all, and then I kind of had to ease back into it. So for a guy like me who's kind of an all-or-nothing guy, it's hard for me to step back and really break the kick down into bit by bit, piece by piece, and so this kind of allowed me to do that. So I feel good about everything. I've been hitting the ball pretty well, so just excited to get back out there. I've missed the atmosphere and the adrenaline of playing in a game. So,
well, we've got a couple of really good games coming up in the next couple of weeks. I mean, we're gonna have plenty of room for adrenal expansion, if I can say that.
Yeah,
Saskatchewan coming up. That's gonna be an interesting.
Right.
That stadium, it's going to be pretty loud, so you're going to be introduced right away to that adrenaline thing you're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. I think, it's been good for me to be – I haven't traveled to the away games, but being out this long, being able to, be on the sidelines, and the last month or so I've been going out and preparing on game day for home games and doing pregame warm-up and stuff like that. So I've tried to stay in tune as much as I can, and even though I haven't been playing, as – try to stay into the game, and when we get in a situation where we need a big punt or a field goal or something, I kind of tried to take myself there mentally, but that's as far as I could go. So it's not the same, but throughout my career, that's just something that I've really enjoyed. Is up until recently, until at the professional level where you have to be good in practice, I wasn't the greatest kicker in practice, but I've always thrived in the games and in front of the crowds and stuff. So it's something that I enjoy. I don't know how my body reacts to the adrenaline or what, but I'm excited about getting out in front of a big crowd.
On today's subject, high school kids that come from a high school didn't have a football team. That must seem a little strange to you, because football was so much your life. Is there anything you want to say? Thank you to the Argonauts for doing this to Tim Horton.
Yeah.
Congratulations to running. From your perspective as a football player, it seemed kind of strange to have a school without a football team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, especially growing up in Mississippi in the South, it doesn't matter how small your school is, how many people go to your school. Just about every school that I've ever known of has had a football team. And so it's great what Tim Hortons and the Argos are doing with this, to have that opportunity, not just for the experiences. Like, I look back at high school, and a lot of my greatest memories are not even necessarily the games, but the friendships and the stuff you learn playing the game, the coaches, and the friends you make, lifelong friends. It's a relationship that can't really be made off the field. It's a special thing. So I think you know, that's probably the greatest thing that it gives them. And you know, you learn a lot through the game about life, discipline, and hard work and stuff like that. So it's exciting to know that there's some more kids going to get that opportunity.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Yep. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, what's really nice, and it's not often, folks, you have to understand this is a great moment for you. If you're watching or listening to this show, you can watch it. When I say that, it's because I have to put these pictures up and stuff. So there is a kind of watching the show, but you don't get to see me, which is a good thing for you. You know, it's not often that you can get a real star of a football team that usually doesn't say anything and nobody ever interviews, especially for radio. You might see him on TV from time to time. You might see him jumping around the stands. You know, he might be walking around the stands, you know, but you don't get a chance to talk to Jason of the Argonauts. But today, folks, that opportunity has arrived. We're going to talk to Jason of the Argonauts. You're going to actually be able to put a voice to Jason of the Argonauts. And we talked to him about leveling the playing field, Level the Playing Field, which is a program that the Argonauts do. And they take part in helping high schools that would like to bring football to their high school, like we discussed just now with Swayze Waters in the United States. It's an automatic. Every school has a football team. And it did seem kind of weird to him. And I could tell, by the way, he was looking, you're getting a football team. And we got an incoming call. I wonder who's calling. I think I know who it is, too. We'll take care of that next week. All right. So, you know, and football is something that's a big part in the United States for young children. We've got Mike here on the program, and we'll talk to you in a second, Mike. Let me get some of this stuff done, and we'll take a break of it, and we'll talk a little bit. Here we go. This is Jason. Big chance, folks. Jason of the Argonauts. I like that. That's got a good sound to it.
Not bad. Not bad.
Jason,
yeah.
We're here today because the high school football league grew by one team today.
Yeah, it did. It grew by one additional team, and it's part of our Level the Playing Field program that's presented by Tim Hortons. We add teams, schools that need a football team, we put them in. We also work with them when it comes to safety, and we did a safety clinic before this. So it's an all-encompassing program, so it's a really neat thing today.
Now, how much work does it take to get a team going? Is this something that took all year, or did it start last year? What kind of intense planning is required?
Well, it's a lot of approval process when it comes to the administration. There has to be buy-in from everybody at the school. Then there has to be a community buy-in. And then after that, then you start looking at funding. The funding is where you can pretty well start a team for about $15,000 to $20,000 safely and efficiently. And what you do is 15 will get you going. And then after that, you have to ensure that you're going to have the student body that's going to support the program. So you have to have the numbers. And then coaching is above all. If you don't have the coaching and the dedication from staff that say, I'm going to spend some time after school, you won't be able to get it done. And they did just that. They put it all together.
So if any school is interested, that's pretty much
the ritual. Yeah, they have to apply in every January. We'll have an application up on our website. And they have to apply and do an application process, and they fill out the form and show that they're committed enough to bring a team in. And then we do this, and we do beyond the fact of just funding. We do everything from mentorship to pep rallies to whatever the school needs to get this thing going.
Congratulations, Jason.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Mike, good day to you, buddy.
Hey, Frank, how you doing?
Hey, listen, I'm doing some stuff on we can talk about this stuff. You can hang in there for a bit, but I wouldn't mind getting your input on some of this stuff. Tell me about your high school football experience. Is there one?
Yeah, I was at this school called St. Anthony Village High School, and they had a pretty nice program. Not really the best, but they were pretty solid.
By Canadian standards, probably you know, as you may or may not know, that our high schools here have had difficulty in keeping teams alive and finding the coaching or the finances to have a local team. It's been very difficult. Does it sound strange to you that it's difficult to put together a school program from your perspective in Minnesota?
No, not really. You know, you can understand. Schools all across here, they have all kind of budget, you know, problems, and they got to pick and choose where they're going to spend their money. And obviously, you know, in Canada, football only, you know, it only comes up to a certain extent. I'm sure they have no problem having high school or hockey programs, I'm guessing, right?
Wrong.
Oh, wow. So it's just sports in general.
Sports in general in Canada and high schools. We don't have that alumni thing that you guys have. It isn't.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we don't have any of it. I'm just saying we don't have it at the same intensity. Going to high school letter, that kind of stuff. I don't know. Hey, anybody disagrees with me, the number is 714-242-5250, or you can leave me a message on Candid Frank Live on Facebook, and I'll be more than glad to call you and save you the call to Los Angeles. Yeah, it is that way here. In Canada, we don't look at sports in the same way. And the other thing is, here we have the major junior leagues. So
yeah.
What we had is the opposite. We had a disconnect between the schools and minor and that kind of hockey, right, at that level. But what's happened in recent years, and not just recently, in the past 10, 15 years, junior A teams are making room for players to go to university and college, and they also offer college scholarships to play on their team. So, you know, there's a lot of good things that can happen in that regard. Okay. Mike, hang in there. We'll talk CFL in a bit. Come on for the ride with me here. I've got another interview to do with, of course, leveling the playing field, and this time we're talking to a coach.
Running me back. I got a quick question though.
Yeah.
How come not the Redmen?
They've changed their team name. They changed it before I got there. It's my first year here.
You could tell that I come from a different era.
Yeah, definitely. I do know that's a sticking point with some of the alumni.
I used to play high school basketball
for
Bathurst, and they were one of our main opponents doing real well. So anyway, here you are. Your football's come back. Why do you think it left? And then in turn, the good news, why do you think it came back?
To be honest, I can't really answer why it left. I do know that in high school, you know, teachers try to provide as many opportunities as they can for kids. With football, unless you have the expertise and the willingness to kind of put yourself out there for the kids, it's hard. It's not like a sport like basketball where you can just pick it up on the internet. Unless you've had contact sports, chances are it'll be really tough for kids to do that. And for myself, I just knew that, every kid needs an opportunity to try something, and I know that there's probably kids in this building that will benefit from having football in their life. I know...
That answers my question. Why is this good for the kids?
I just know, like I said, football has defined who I am as a human being and as a man, and I'm hoping to give the kids the exact same experience of being a young man and learning how to be responsible, committed, being there for your teammates, and
being
the best you can at everything that you do.
You're all part of the team.
Yeah.
And a team approach is a good thing to learn.
Yeah.
Now, what do you see what are you hoping in the immediate future?
For me, I just tell them I just want them to learn how to play the game the way it needs to be played. So they're out there every day. They're never late, not getting in trouble in the hallway, in the community. And we're just learning how to play football. To be quite honest with you, only one student has ever played tackle football before. So myself and Mr. Rowland and Mr. Davidson are coaches, and we're just trying to teach them how to play football. And, you know, I'm not going to worry about the scores in the first year, but... I mean, I would imagine we're going to have some success. We have some fantastic kids. And the beautiful thing, I think, about coaching football is a lot of them have not even tapped their own potential because they've never really been pushed.
You've discussed a couple of the long-term goals. Any other long-term goals that are beneficial to these young men?
Well, I think it's just becoming a man, becoming an adult member of society that does the right thing. Like the big thing for me is they make the right decisions because it's the right thing, not because we tell them to do. And a lot of them probably don't understand that right now. But hopefully, you know, they'll be able to look back on their high school experience and say, you know what, I didn't like it when coach was yelling at me to be here on time, to never be late, to never be sick. But now that I'm 24, 25, and I have people who depend on me, I can appreciate the fact that, you know, what he was trying to instill in me. And that's what we're going to try to do.
We talked about the long-distance goals. Now, what about the school? I mean, alumni have always been notorious in football, be dedicated. It builds this sort of unity. How do you see that working out here with Runnymede as far as the other students are concerned?
Well, that's the hope. My goal is that the school can buy into this is their team. It's everyone's team, whether you're on the field or not. They've got some really amazing things happening at Runnymede. Like, they've got a really strong robotics team that actually went to the North American Championships. So hopefully we can make liaisons between clubs, and hopefully they can come out and support the team, and then maybe our football team will be in the stands when they're competing as a robotics team. So hopefully it's something that we're going to have to work on. Not a lot of schools really do that. Most teams, it's just them, and they worry about themselves. But that's a challenge, I think, for our coaching staff and for these students to buy into. I'm part of a family now. Like, it's not just about me. It's about the team, and it's about the school and even our community. So.
Best wishes to you, the students, the players, the students that will be watching, and, of course, the reputation of the school going and getting out there, because you're bringing Runnymede out into the open, actually.
Yeah, and we just like to thank the Argos and Tim Hortons, because if it wasn't for them, this wouldn't have been possible. So,
congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure meeting you. And really good, a lot of good luck. And thanks for coming back. Ravens are okay. Redmond?
I understand.
They're still red.
We're going to do one more.
Yeah, they're the Redmen. That's what they used to be when I used to play basketball for Bathurst. And now they're the Ravens, which I guess it's okay. You know, it's all right. I think it's all right.
You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. We're the Argos cheerleaders.
Well, now, are you sure there's any fish in here at all? Because we haven't latched into one today yet.
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be radical. The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Come on, go, go, go. Woo!
Be offensive. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You have any more popcorn?
Okay, let's take a short break from the program. Got some really nasty noise coming from your phone, Mike. I don't know what it is, but it gets pretty intense out there. Okay, Mike, what did you want to talk about today?
No, I mean, I don't want to interrupt if you guys had the whole thing going
no,
on.
No. Don't worry about it, Mike. Mike, you're always welcome on here, and you know, we talk CFL football, we talk Argos. So, you know, the theme tonight is how the Argos work in their community, but that doesn't mean we have to stop talking about the football. Now, what do you think of what's going on right now? You've got Kackert now out. Did you hear that the Argos were unaware that they could have called back that play, that fumble, because there was an illegal hit? Are you aware of that?
No, I didn't. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
When was this
announced? No, it was on. If you listen to the game on TSN, the announcers were well aware that if an illegal hit causes a turnover or changes the direction of the game, the team can basically throw the yellow flag out and have it reviewed. And if there was that kind of, in this case, a headshot, then the ball could have reverted back to the Toronto Argonauts. Scott Milanovic admitted that he did not know that that was the case. The Argos were lucky to have won that game because, in my opinion, that was one heck of a turning point.
Yeah, no kidding. That's, wow. Well, you know, I guess that's how it is sometimes. Just, what can you say?
Well, all you can say is they won't let it happen again, right?
Yeah.
Now they know. But it's amazing that, this is the thing about how quickly and how much leagues are changing when it comes to injuries. So much so that maybe even some of the teams can't keep up to the new rules. And in this case, that was clearly shown. But, you know, makes me feel good to know that if push came to shove and the Argos were aware of it, there wouldn't have been an advantage, or there in the future there won't be an advantage where a player gets hurt. You know, the insult to injury is the you lose the ball. You know, a penalty's not called and you lose the ball. That's getting hit twice, I think, isn't it? Like getting your ass hit by the door while you're leaving.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So what did you want to talk about?
The recent moves that was happening around the league. First off, I guess with the Argos, they signed the 2011 first-round draft pick, the offensive lineman Tyler Holmes.
Absolutely. Parenteau just left, and I guess that sort of was part of the way they opened the door for him to come in.
And they also released the lineman Joel Reinders. Do you know
yes.
him? Yeah, they let him go.
Yeah, he wasn't you know, he was a player. I think maybe he was only on the practice roster, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what happens at this time of year. The CFL has players that basically come loose because of the NFL. In fact, the draft pick you're referring to was in the NFL as well, had some experience in the NFL before coming here. So, yeah, it's a great move. You know, it improves the team. And that kind of new blood can really help at this time of year. And as we're all noticing this year, I asked Scott Milanovic if this year seemed odd in as far as do you think there's been more injuries this year? And he goes, he says, especially with quarterbacks. And he's been involved in the league for some 15 years, I think. And he even said, it really has been, you know, an unusual year for injuries. But I happen to think that the quarterbacks that are playing today are spending a lot more time running with the ball than passing in the CFL. And the more they run, the more chances there are for them to get hurt. Now, Ricky Ray didn't get hurt that way. He didn't get hurt because he was running with the ball, but he did run out of the pocket, which to me is the same thing. You know, the original dropback passers, rather than run out of the pocket, would ground the ball.
Yeah, it's true.
So, so in answer to your question, another O-lineman with that kind of talent is a welcome addition. How about Kuali? He ended up in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I wasn't even aware that Montreal had let him go. I thought he was still at the Alouettes, but apparently he wasn't, and there you go. So it's a needed thing, too, because with Ray Williams out for the season, they need a guy in the middle that they can trust and knows the league. And, you know, and EJ is a playmaker. I think we can all agree on that.
Absolutely. Not only that, today I found out that the players were asking where he was because they didn't see him in Montreal, and they asked where he was. One of the players was calling him, and he says, "I'm right behind you." They're all in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You're looking for your buddy, and he's in Saskatchewan with you. What are you doing here? Right. I can't tell you.
Gosh, it's like from now on, any key Argo that gets let go of, especially on the defensive side of the ball, in the next, you know, 2-3 years, are all going to end up Riders at this rate. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? I think that's a statement of a compliment to the coaching staff of the Argos, I think.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the thing when you look at the Argos, especially on defense, I think it shows just their ability to find guys. Like, I look at the Riders, right, and you notice how the Riders, and we talked about this before, that they're top-heavy in their salary cap by paying a lot of these big-name, you know, free agents and whatnot, and now once some of these guys get hurt, they don't really have that depth behind them, and they have to go out and sign a free agent off the street. But you look at the Argos, and the Argos will lose a guy, and they'll have a solid player sitting in there in the wings, you know, and I think Jim Barker and Chris Jones' philosophy of trying to avoid a lot of big salaries and just trying to spread it out and have more depth behind your players, it really is paying off in a year, like especially like this season when you have so many guys going down. It's really paying off.
You know, I think we've all heard a lot of axioms that relate to the fact that you can teach defense, but you can't teach offense. In other words, like it doesn't in football, it doesn't transcend like it does in hockey, let's say, where they say you can teach a guy how to play defense, but you can't teach him to deke a goalie, or you can't teach him to make those incredible plays that a Gretzky makes, or you know, or a Crosby makes. You know, that stuff's unteachable. So I guess you know, on the defensive side of the ball, it may be true that it's all about how you teach somebody and how willing they are to learn and how quickly they learn. And I guess the Argos do a fine job of identifying players who either fit into their defensive scheme or identify as guys that can learn quickly and adapt. You know, like Morley in his first game gets an interception.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, you know, I think that all stems from the good coaching that the Argos have. They're very fortunate to have good coaching. And I think they do something that a lot of other teams may not do as well, and that is they do adjust like no other team. I'm not, you know, maybe Calgary, but I think Calgary is more of a strong defensive team. You know what I mean? Like they're just very
more
strong.
Talent, right?
Yeah. They're a very strong defensive team. But, you know, you look around the league and defenses have problems from time to time just because they lack the ability to do some stuff.
Absolutely. You know, it's have you seen that movie Moneyball starring Brad Pitt?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's sort of that concept. That's the feeling I get with Barker is that he shuns, you know, the whole idea of going after the big names and the splashy signings, but preferring to find, you know, guys who can fit into their whatever systems or schemes that your team is running.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. That's my fault.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know what? I forgot to hit. I forgot to hit silent. My bad.
Oh.
My
okay.
bad.
Hello?
Mr. Emery, how's it going?
Not bad yourself.
Okay, listen, let Mike finish what he was saying. I'm sorry, Mike. Mr. Emery paged me on Facebook. Rob, right?
Yep.
It's Rob, right? Yeah. Rob wanted to talk about Argos, and Mike does too, so let Mike finish what he's saying, and we'll get you in here. Mike wants to talk. Rob, you're next. Okay, bud?
Okay.
No,
perfect.
It's
okay,
let,
Mike.
Let Rob go right on ahead.
Are you sure?
No,
okay.
Go for it,
yeah.
Mike.
Yep. No, I'm good. Go ahead.
We're good. He's here all the time, buddy. He's here all the time.
Okay.
Where are you calling from, first of all?
I'm calling from the great, beautiful capital of Canada, Ottawa, Ontario, home of the new Ottawa Red Blacks, former Ottawa Rough Riders.
Yes.
That's all I got to say.
I'm working on getting Glenn Kulka on the show.
Oh, there you go. He's a very good gentleman. Hung out with him, well, not hung out with him a lot, but I've talked to him a few times every time I see him at Rough Rider functions and that.
What did you want to talk about?
Well, the thing that's really kind of getting to me is that Ricky Ray is an all-star quarterback. Don't get me wrong about that. He's a great quarterback. If you realize, when he was playing in Edmonton, he was Jason Moss's backup. And now Ricky Ray is in Toronto, and Jason Moss is his quarterback coach. That's just kind of freaky. You know, how he's the backup to Jason Moss, but now Jason Moss is... I'm all lost of words here. If I do believe Ricky Ray was starting and Jason Moss was his backup, that's what I wanted to get. Jason Moss was Ricky Ray's backup, and now they're in Toronto and Jason Moss is coaching Ricky Ray.
Well, don't
that's a good point.
don't you think that sometimes you don't have to be a great player to be a good coach?
True, but like if you look at Jason Garrett, who used to be in 91 here in Ottawa, he was a third string quarterback for the Ottawa Rough Riders. I was just flipping around on a football website watching Sports Desk and this and that, and I heard Jason Garrett with the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm puzzled because he was a third-string quarterback here in Ottawa in the CFL. Then all of a sudden, he's playing in the NFL. I was like, no, that shit's not good. Sorry, excuse my language.
That's okay.
I was like, it's not really a good thing, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, boom, he's the head coach. It's like, wow. You know, so I made a few calls, talked to a few people, some of my... football connections, and his father is a scout for the Dallas Cowboys, and that's how Jason got out there to play for the Cowboys.
He now does stuff for the Dallas Cowboys. He has a blog that he does for the Cowboys.
Who's that,
and,
Jason?
Yep.
Isn't he the head coach?
Yeah, Jason Garrett?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jason Garrett's the head coach for Dallas.
Well, right, I thought you were talking about Jason Moss for a second.
No, Jason
okay.
Moss. Okay, I'm just going to get back to my main point here, is you got Ricky Ray gone for the season. You might, if the Argos, which looks really good right now, they're going to make it past the first round. They'll go to the second round. Will mm-hmm. Jason Moss be ready for the second round of the playoffs?
Oh, come on, man.
or even if, because don't get me wrong, this Caleras guy, he's a very good quarterback, right? So if Toronto makes it to the Grey Cup, which they won't because Hamilton's going to kick some ass. I'm a Ticats fan, boys.
All right.
But you're in Ottawa.
Yes, I am, sir.
But what happens when Ottawa has their team? What happens when Ottawa has their team? Do you change your allegiance to your local team?
Well, you know what? In my heart, I'm always going to be an Ottawa Rough Rider fan. You know, I worked 4 years with the team as a water boy, ball boy, you know. And then in 2006, I was the assistant equipment manager for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, you know, the team that I'm going for is Hamilton, but I still have Ottawa in my heart.
Okay, so Hamilton's going to kick Toronto's butt, but, you know, you do realize there's one hurdle they have to get over.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
They got to make the playoffs.
Who, Hamilton? Oh, you know what? That's not good. That's not good.
You totally set Frank up for that one. He just hit it out of the park.
Yeah. I'm not even sure if Montreal's going to make playoffs. They keep playing the way they're playing now.
Okay,
especially with Cavillo.
It could be Edmonton and Winnipeg coming in.
Oh, no.
I don't know. And then I think it's going to be kind of weird when you get Winnipeg moving back to the Western, and then you're only going to have four teams left here in the Eastern.
Well, it is the way it should be. I mean, let's face it. Winnipeg historically has always fit in better with, you know, the West. They've been in the West longer than they've been in the East, even though the last few years they've been in the East for a long time. The Banjo Bowl is a game played between two Western teams, one of which is Winnipeg. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, we all know that Ottawa's coming in, and I think we all know that either there is going to be another team in the East in the near future. Soon after Ottawa kicks that first first time they touch the ball in real play, I think there'll be already talk of another team coming in joining the Eastern Division of the Canadian Football League. And I think
it'll be a Nova Scotia team.
You think it'll be Halifax?
Yeah.
Or Moncton.
Yeah, I went out to St. John's, New Brunswick with the I'm the equipment manager of the Ottawa Invaders, the semi-pro football team we have here, and we made a trip out to St. John's, and it was just like, wow, you know, it's a semi-pro team, and they had like a lot of people at the game, and I was, you know, and I think out there they're going to be excited to get CFL football out there just to make it happen, you know?
Do you think...
is there no pro team in the whole region in the Maritimes?
No.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. In hockey, I think the AHL or whatever, they have the... Moose Heads? I'm wearing the shirt right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Moose Head Hockey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's in the East.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right. So what do you think? Having been, it sounds to me like you know that Nova Scotia's got a good chance. We know the league already approves of Moncton, New Brunswick. And you're talking about St. John's. You're talking St. John's, Newfoundland?
No, St. John's, New Brunswick.
Okay. It's St. John, Newfoundland, and St. John's, New Brunswick.
Yeah.
Okay. I always screw that up.
Yeah, I know.
It's like New York, New York. Anyway, do you think they could support more than one team, Rob?
Who's that?
The East Coast.
The Moncton?
The East Coast. Between, you think they could support two teams?
Oh yeah, they can
the
get
CFL?
A. Yeah, they can get a team if they find the right kind of owners like Ottawa has. They'll be able to get a team in Moncton, a team in New Brunswick, and maybe even out in Newfoundland.
That'd be fantastic. That'd be fantastic, because then we could move Hamilton into the West.
Oh, hey. I don't like the sound of that.
I'm talking on Facebook right now with a buddy of mine. He's one of the Box J boys, Jared Harris. He's asking how I am. You know why he's asking how I am? Because I think he heard me take a shot at Hamilton.
Are we on the radio right now?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Oh my God! I better text my buddy out in Hamilton and say, "Hey, buddy, put it on Toronto radio station."
Well, it's not a radio station. It's blog radio. Send him the link that you use to know this is happening. We'll call Jarrett right now, and you can say, "You know Jarrett?" Then you know Jarrett.
Do I know him?
Yeah.
I've probably met him once or twice when I was out in Hamilton.
Okay, well, I want to introduce to you the one, the only, the Box J boy of all Box J boys, Jarrett Harris. Hey, Jarrett.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Not bad, Jarrett. Yourself?
Good. Who's this?
It's Rob from Ottawa.
Hey,
and
Rob.
And I'm a Ticat fan, baby.
Well, good luck with your Red Blacks next year. We'll be up to watch a couple games for sure.
Oh yeah, we got to make you guys the Box Red Black boys.
Oh no, you guys, we'll come up and just enjoy the party. Don't worry about that.
Are you gonna bring my boy Wayne Tebow with you or what?
Wayne Tebow. Who's Wayne Tebow?
Wayne Philbo, or
Box J Boys?
Yeah, he's part of the Box J Boys, or he was, or something like that. Wayne, he used to work for the city of Hamilton.
Oh, I'll probably know him if I saw him. I'm having a brain fart. I've been in jury duty all for 3 days, so I'm not too smart right now.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for admitting that, and that our legal system is in good hands.
Yeah.
So who do you think's going to win this weekend?
I don't know.
I want to get some predictions on the games here.
I'd like to see the Ticats win. I think they bought into Austin's system. But, you know, it's just the little things. I mean, Kanji, he needs to find his feet. They got a spot, you know, they got to set the ball for him, and they just got to play some tighter football, but I think they're well on their way. So I'd like to see them win. I'm calling the Ticats, but I don't want to jinx them. So
yeah, I'm looking at the game tracker right now, and if you notice, Edmonton is their last two games. They won both games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So they're
playing Winnipeg again.
Yeah.
And Cavis Reed is my boy. He's awesome. He's an awesome guy. I've met him, you know, when I was out in Hamilton. And so I'm going to Edmonton. I'm going to Hamilton, Toronto, and Saskatchewan.
Ooh. Yeah. What do you think, Jarrett? What do you think,
Who's
Jarrett?
Who's Toronto play? Who does
Calgary.
Toronto
play? Calgary. Calgary.
Ooh. If
That's
they
a tough
win,
one.
If they That's win, it's going to be by a field goal. I think it's going to be a tight game.
I one thing I'm going to say is Toronto will beat the spread, which is 7.
Yeah.
They'll beat the spread, but I'm not sure they'll win. But, you know, they just might. They play really well in tight situations. I disagree. I don't think Edmonton's going to win in Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg's going to win at home. Yeah, I think Winnipeg's going to win at home. I think Hamilton's going to win in Hamilton. Calgary, I'm going to call Toronto just because the difference is being an Argo fan. And I think Saskatchewan, I really believe that Saskatchewan's going to be in tough this weekend, but they should finally win again. They should get the field victory once again.
Yeah, because they're 0-2 in their last two games, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I got to agree with Frank. I'm going Winnipeg. I think Ticats are going to blow out the Elves. Toronto pulls out a close one in Calgary, and the Riders are going to hammer the Lions because they have no Travis Lule, so that's going to be a blowout.
Now, here's another thing about CFL that's bothering the heck out of me. Retired player numbers.
Uh-oh.
Why is Fred Stamps for Edmonton wearing number 2? That should be retired. The gizmo, Henry Williams, wore that number. He broke, I think, almost every record. He was the best punt returner in the CFL. Why is he wearing that number?
I guess it wasn't retired.
Well, it should have been. You know, and in Toronto, I think you guys have a number 9 as a running back or a wide inside running back or wide receiver or whatever, wearing number 9. Damon Allen wore that number. Should be gone.
Oh,
why?
Come on, Damon
why?
Allen, are you
why?
Kidding me?
Come on, Damon Allen was the best quarterback.
Yeah, but he was in Toronto.
Not Toronto,
for like,
though, not Toronto.
Just a couple of years, you know?
He had a copy
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
I even have an interview where he says that.
You know, I watched the
He's
game on... I watched the game on ESPN Classics. Actually, I caught like the last 2 minutes, and I was on the bench for Hamilton during that game. And it's when Damon broke all the records or whatever. And I was like, damn. I'm like, I hope it's on again so I can watch it. You know?
I like, and, you know, on the retirement thing, on the retirement thing, Rob, I like retiring numbers, but I don't like retiring the number completely. Like, I like the idea that, you know, Daryl Sittler wears number 27 and somebody else can wear 27.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't see a problem with that. And then putting his number up there with his name on the back of the shirt, I just think retiring numbers is a little ridiculous because some teams just get carried away.
Yeah. Like,
Boston Celtics.
Exactly. You got no more numbers you can wear.
Yeah, like I was talking with Stephon Jones last week, and I made an argument with him, and I said, why is G. Roy Simon wearing number 81 for Saskatchewan? They had a big, big, big thing here on TSN last week about, what's his name there, number 81 for Saskatchewan before it was G. Roy Simon. Can't even remember the guy's name.
Narcisse didn't wear that number,
yeah.
did he?
No, Narcisse wore 80.
Yeah, okay.
But 81 was Fairholme wore 18.
But that's just what I'm saying. How important, really, seriously, how important is the number a player wears, historically speaking? You know what I mean?
If he's like a great, great player, like a Larry Bird or a Mike Jordan or... You know, it has to be a transcendent player that was so huge as a franchise, like a Ricky Ray. Like, if Ray plays 5 more years, wins, you know, 2 or 3 titles, I think the Argos would have to take a long, strong consideration of retiring the number just because he meant a lot to the team.
It would have to be a legacy player, regardless of the league, regardless of the sport.
So how many are you entitled to in a lifetime?
Like Gretzky, he was...
But how many players... Jarrett, in a team's history, can you do that with?
Not many, right? Like you have to be careful.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't think the numbers is important in the sense that you freeze that number. You can do it unofficially. Like there's a lot of players that come in even into Toronto that won't put on a certain number. That you know who's going to go even if they didn't retire Gretzky's 99. You know who's going to wear 99 and who's going to wear 99 in Edmonton?
And,
yeah.
and if you do, you got to have cojones the size of
freaking
bowling balls.
You know, forget bowling balls. Those exercise balls people sit on. You got to have giant monster King Kong cojones.
look at Reggie Jackson in New York, 44.
Yeah, right.
You're gonna wear if you're a Yankee, you're gonna wear 44. You know,
yeah.
the fans will tell you. I mean, the situation will tell you whether it's smart enough to wear. Because, you know, there are a lot of players whose numbers are worn, you know, after they retire. But it's not like – I think it's up to common sense. And I just find it very – I don't think the number is what makes the player. It's the player. Then, you know, in this case, this is one time where the name on the back matters more than the number in the front or the number in the back.
It's like here in Ottawa, they for the Rough Riders, they retired number 11, number 12, 77, 62, you know, and it's like now that the team is gone, you know, we got to start a new thing, I guess, with the Red Blacks and say, okay, well, you're going to, you know, like say we get the Zach Collaros or whatever, say he's going to be number 11 or whatever, and he becomes like the all-star quarterback and breaks so many records and, you know, not breaks them, but sets records for the Red Blacks that people got to try to break. Well, they're going to retire his number, right?
Right. Yeah, but what's the important thing? You know, paying your respects and honoring the player or honoring his number?
Well,
like, really?
Probably the player.
They don't go hand in hand. I don't think they do. I think the the number is unimportant.
But see, yeah, like I think Mike was saying earlier that, you know, you got to have numbers for a team. You know, you can't be retiring every number.
Right.
Right. So take, say, Collaros is 11, and the Red Blacks decide to retire it. Well, put a little plaque up at the new Frank Clair Stadium with a little jersey and his number 11 and his last name on it, and that's it. Somebody else can take that number now.
Yeah,
as long as that
exactly.
number is retired.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And it's mentioned up in the stands, so all the fans can see it, everyone can see it, and boom, you know?
What
I mean,
was
the
it?
Only
you
guy
think,
that should have their number
the
retired
whole thing about
it
retiring
has to be
numbers.
A transcendent guy. It can't be just anyone. It has to be, if in the case of the CFL, the only guy I can think of in the last 10 years that would even qualify for that would have to be Anthony Covillo. There's no other player that, you have to be the elite of the elite, consistent, winning championships, staying with a franchise for a long time to merit that. Otherwise, you can't just be a 2-3-4-year guy and then maybe win a title and that's not good enough. Like right now, if Ray were to retire, there's no way you could retire his number, right? He didn't do enough.
Yeah.
Same with Chad Owens. As great as they are, you have to do it for an extended period of time. So as far as I can tell, Cavill's the only CFL player since 2000 that would qualify, along with maybe G. Roy Simon, and that's about it.
Yeah.
It comes right back to the whole point of those things is continuing a legacy and legacy building, right? If you go to Maple ACC, you see, I don't even know if there's a dozen numbers retired, but it's legacy building. And, like, that's what, you know, I mean, the CFL has a huge history. We all know that. But it's like with the National Lacrosse League. They're 25 years old now, but they've just started their Hall of Fame, and they're starting the legacy building. But the whole thing with that is respecting someone who's dedicated their time to that team and made a difference. It reminds people that, hey, in the bad times, we were still a winner, and we're going to be a winner in the future.
Yeah. Well, you use the Leafs as an example, right? You use the Leafs as an example. And what kind of success have they had since 1967?
And yet
there's two jerseys that of players who played in that time, Sittler and Salmi. I don't have a problem with their jerseys being up there, but I do have a problem in nobody being able to use those numbers. And you know what? Let me, guys, using that as an example, Bobby Bond wore 21. Salming wore 21. I think it's kind of great that two great players that played for the Leafs wore that number. I think that's great. You know, and I think it's kind of, like you said, Jared, I agree 100%. It is. With building that kind of that aura around the number. Well, you know what? You don't give a guy a decent jersey. We're not talking about Gretzky here. We're talking about players like, let's say, Keon, you know, Sittler. Wouldn't it be great if they get a great player that they draft who looks to be a great future player, and they have a ceremony where Sittler hands the guy his jersey and says, "I'd be proud of you wearing this jersey." I think that builds an aura as well. Where, you know, you're continuing the tradition. The tradition is bigger than any individual, but the individual can be a big part of it.
That actually happened with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know if you knew that Michael Irvin's number was number 88 was retired. Then they when they drafted Dez Bryant in the first round, you know, he looked like he was going to be a great, and he has so far has been a really good receiver, and he asked, Irvin
Des
to
Bryant.
The number,
yeah.
And he went ahead and did it, and that's a perfect example of what you're talking about actually playing out.
I think that's great. I think that's wonderful.
And that continues the legacy, right? That's passing
exactly.
the torch.
Yeah.
You know, it's showing respect
yeah.
for the old, and the old showing respect for the new.
Right. Where the name on the jersey is not as important as the name on the front, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
isn't that what it's all about, bottom line? And I love Dave Keon, but I think he's gone a little off the rails as far as wanting his number retired. He's my favorite player. He's the reason why I hated Harold Ballard, because the way he treated Dave Keon. Dave Keon's my favorite player of all time with the Maple Leafs. But, you know, I think it's important that Dave Keon's number be up there, right, in the Raptors like it is. And I think one day if there's a player that they feel, would make Dave Keon proud or carry on the Dave Keon legacy, I wouldn't have a problem with him having that number. But I'd want it to be somebody significant, not just another schmo who comes to the team for a cup of coffee and then he wears that number. So I'm kind of partly with you guys in the retirement. I just think that when a number's had a great run, like a Sittler or a Keon or a Rocket Richard, the next
yeah.
person that wears that number should merit that number, is
yeah.
all I'm saying. There should be something
that
makes that.
That's really been eating at you, Frank, for a while. I can tell, man. Just like
Does Winnipeg have number 15 retired?
Oh, no, they're reserving that for Tim Tebow.
That one should be retired, because Les Brown was the best DB ever in the CFL.
They got their third stringer, their backup Max Hall, wearing that right now.
Oh no!
You see, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no.
Like I'm saying, there's nothing wrong with showing a number respect, but
yeah.
complete,
well,
you know.
Yeah, well, like what I said earlier, you know, in the stadium, hang up a jersey or whatever, the last name and the number. That's it.
That's
somebody
good enough.
Somebody else
want
to wear 15? Boom. You know.
But you better know whose jersey you're wearing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because you're not going to give, like, say the Ottawa Roughriders are still around, and some rookie player comes in, he wants to wear 89. Well, dude, you better have hands as good as Stephon Jones, because Steptoe caught some good balls and he played a very good game.
The problem is no one has any idea who that guy is. Like, he has to be somebody that people remember and would say, like, people are going to remember Cavillo 5-10 years from now. So in Montreal, they're not just going to let any player wear number 13, because people are going to be like, hold on, that number belonged to one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
But, you know, you take a guy and say, hey, you know, someone was wearing, whatever, Damon Allen's number 9 in Toronto. How many people in Toronto still remember Damon Allen?
Probably all of them.
Oh, come on.
Well,
really?
that's because every year they keep getting rid of more bobbleheads they made of him while he was here.
Oh, my God.
Toronto changes quarterbacks like I change underwear daily.
Exactly. Let's never forget the Cleo Lemon era.
But Jarrett, let's not forget that eventually they get a good one and he does pretty good.
Yeah. Oh,
we got a nice pair of underwear right now.
I like Caleros. I really like Caleros.
I like Caleros. Caleros is good. I like him.
You want
him to be a
red flag?
Really,
you know what? I if Toronto's smart, they'll keep him.
Well,
if they're smart,
right?
Because Ricky Ray is probably going to be injury prone right about now, because he's already been injured. I think he was injured in Edmonton also, no?
Well, if you look across the league, I mean, if that poor bastard in Edmonton, if he can survive the season, he's got talent. Calgary's got, you know, kids waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
Winnipeg, you know, they've got guys waiting in the wings. The Montreal kid who's backing up Calvillo, he's showing potential. Is it Tate, his name, I want to say? But,
yeah, Drew
you know,
Tate.
And then we've got Lefebvre. He needs some grooming, but same thing, man. Like, you know, for the first time in a long, long, long time, there's a crop of quarterbacks. We're not just relying on the old grizzled vets.
Yeah. It looks like the teams are gathering guys, grooming them, getting them used to the team's respect, tie cap ball or bomber ball or Esky ball or stamp ball or whatever.
Ball.
You know, even like I think the quarterbacking for the future is it's potentially, notch wood, looking up for the Canadian Football League, and that's what we need.
Everyone's saying the Canadian Football League is garbage, it's no good, they don't like it, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's people who I really don't give a shit about because they don't give the league a chance.
Because, you know, I mentioned, I'm like, yeah, I worked with the Ottawa Rough Riders. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah. Like, what did you do? I'm like, well, I was a water boy, then I was a ball boy, then I was an equipment assistant. They're like, ah, you suck. I'm like, whoa, hey, come on now. He's like, CFL sucks, and we'll have more NFL. And
You know what you should do with them? Say to them this. Say why. Why? Because when my wife saw all the media hype around the Leafs starting to play, and now you don't see anything about hockey now, she started baying like a sheep. And she did that because, oh, it's the NHL. That means it's cool. Bah!
Yeah.
It's owned by MLSE. Bah! Everyone goes to it, right?
Yeah.
You know, for some people, it seems like it's not cool to follow Canadian sports.
No.
Like, for some reason, it's uncool. Well, you know what? Screw them. You know, because I like lacrosse, I like hockey, I like Canadian football. Baseball, I go to drink at. Right?
Yeah.
You know, NHL hockey, I can't support a team. I think playoff hockey's awesome. But I can't support a team where it costs you $600 to take your wife and two kids to a game when you can go to a Rock game and it'll cost you $100. And that's tickets, pop, everything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, when you have a major league team that really the people follow it and possibly have no chance in hell of actually ever seeing a live game unless they win tickets. What the hell's that?
Yeah,
that's hero worship. That's not a sport that is attainable by the regular fan. Sorry, guys.
I hate these people.
NFL's better. Well, tell me why it's better. What about the game that makes the NFL better? Because the NFL has some of the best football athletes in the world. But you know what? I see them. If you want to watch that, that's your choice. But I want to watch the best Canadians. Because I like, you know what? I like my country.
Yeah.
I like my athletes. You know? So that's what
I found it really weird.
You're preaching to the choir, man. That's, you're hitting it right, man.
Exactly.
I found it really weird when Ottawa didn't have a CFL team. And it kind of shrugged me a little bit because we're the capital of Canada, and it's the Canadian Football League. There's a picture wrong with that right there.
You got to just tell people like who knocked the CFL is tune in next year, not this year, next season.
Yeah.
And what you're going to see next season is a new team in Ottawa with a brand new beautiful stadium, a new beautiful stadium in Hamilton.
Supposedly a brand new beautiful stadium here in Ottawa.
Well, it will be. I mean,
the designs look good and all that. But you know, I still remember the old Frank Clair Stadium, where it's just like it's home to me. You know, like when I saw the thing on YouTube or whatever, demolition of Lansdowne. And you hear it 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom, 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 boom. I'm like, tears coming down. I'm like, damn. I'm like, what are you doing that to my house for, man?
Yeah.
Well, you know, time marches on, Rob. That has to happen. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I have a question for my American friend. When are you going to get your ass up to Hamilton next season so I can treat you to a tailgate?
Oh, I've already told Frank and John that, you know, the commissioner tweeted and said they might be doing it, is if the Argos and the Ticats are the opening game next year, I'm coming. If I got to scalp tickets, I don't care.
Have to scalp tickets, just let me know and I'll get you seats with us.
All right, awesome, because that's going to be an event can't miss for any CFL fan. I'm just so looking forward to that new stadium. You guys got to be excited. Is there any progress? Like, any construction?
Well, you know what? There was some ambivalence towards the progress. No one was thinking it was getting done. So I talked to someone within the team, and they said what people don't realize is a large portion of the construction is prefabricated. So it's done within like a factory, right?
Oh.
A lot, like just like they do with bridges now. You know, they almost manufacture the whole bridge, shut down the highway, bring it down the road, and lift it up and put it on, and the bridge is ready. So
yeah.
What they're doing is they're building a lot of pieces and then assembling it, just like they do with a luxury cruise ship or any large.
The same thing, Jared.
Thing.
They do it with hotels. All
yeah.
The hotel rooms are already, they just blocks, and they put the blocks on top of each other already
yep.
inside.
Yep.
Yeah,
so what
and,
this is, sorry, Frank, but if you see the pictures on various Facebook things, it's really coming up. Like it's the superstructure is going to be in place within a couple months, and then you're going to see all the exterior go on. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they built it on time. I wouldn't
yeah.
be surprised if they had it ready on time.
I'm trying to see it right now. I'm on Ivor Wynn Stadium website. And there's no pictures of the Ivor Wynn Stadium demo.
Best thing is to go to the Tie Cats Facebook page.
Oh, there it is right there. No, that's not it. Yeah, that's it there. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's coming together, eh?
Wow, they're tearing it all down, like everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like the whole stadium.
They're reconfiguring it to get rid of the sun issue that they used to have.
Wow.
Like it's turned 90 degrees, right?
Yeah,
I think they, for the price tag, I mean, they did a really nice job as far as the designs. Like, I know some people were trying to knock it and say it wasn't as good as they expected, but when you really take a look at it and you see, like, the way everything from even the patio and, like, the whole sunken field and that whole thing, I think it's going to be absolutely amazing, especially from just a game day experience. I think it's even going to be better than Ivor Wynn was, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think.
Jared, are
I'm
they going to have... Are they going to have noise reduction? Is it going to have that the same kind of thing that Winnipeg has because of the neighborhood they're in?
You know, that's an interesting thing because I've heard everything from that neighborhood is going to be rezoned, so it'll become – I don't know if you've ever been to Hamilton, but Hamilton has
yep.
a couple areas. The Hess Village is the most
– Hess Village, oh
there's
my
a school,
God.
There's a school right across the
now.
Street. Oh,
no,
okay, so that's one big piece of property. That's one big piece of property. And then there's a whole line of, homes, you know.
They're talking about rezoning it. So, you know, but what's interesting is the whole idea of the tailgating because from what I understand, there's going to be about a kilometer walk because they're talking about having the tailgating, the parking at a park about 900 meters away. And when I spoke to the Tie Cat about that, I said, well, listen, if you're going to do that, you better have a bunch of transit buses ready to take the elderly fans and stuff
oh,
to
yeah.
the game.
And
right?
me.
Well,
yeah.
you know.
And,
and I mean, he said, I was thinking about a fan march, kind of like what they did in Toronto. And I said, you know what? That's a great idea for the younger fans. But, you know, your demographic,
yeah.
man. There's a lot of blue hairs there that it's gonna
and,
need
and
a bus.
And you need a bus to come to Ottawa to pick me up to go down.
There you
yeah.
go. There you go.
yeah.
Well, you gotta come down, man. You're always welcome at our tailgates.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
Is anyone? So none of you guys are going to Moncton this weekend?
No.
No. No. No. No. I got. I should talk to you off the air, Jared.
Okay.
I got something going on this weekend.
Is everything all right?
Yeah. No, I got something going on this weekend.
Okay.
So I can't. There's no way I can go to Moncton.
What's that?
Yeah, are you going?
Oh. Well, long story short, between losing my car and half my house to a flood and doing jury duty right now, I could go about as much as... No, I'm not going. I was going
to
do some stuff with the CFL alumni, and we were going to, now they're still doing it at the Old Triangle out in Moncton. They're having a fundraiser for the Moncton Cancer Center, the CFL Fans Fight Cancer Group. But, yeah, I was pretty bummed, man, because Leo Ezrin had something set up where I was going to do something with the alumni, and Yeah, it's fun. I do that stuff on Great Cups. I do with the alumni, I do the auction. You know, when they auction off stuff. Last year we auctioned off Ange Mosca's cane and stuff. And I'm pretty bummed out. I'm not going to Great Cup this year either.
Oh.
No rooms in Regina.
Yeah.
And that cane, was it sold before Mr. Manning did his 7 touchdowns?
He's saying that Peyton Manning, after he broke the record in a press conference, he talked about breaking, what's that guy's name that Mosca hit?
Oh, Joe Capp.
Joe Capp.
Yeah, Joe Capp's record, and then he mentioned, like, oh, you know, that he got in a fight with an old guy, and that kind of went viral. Yeah,
and it was on YouTube.
Yeah.
Really?
And Peyton Manning was aware of it. Peyton Manning was aware of it. That cane could be worth a lot of money.
It sold for $7,000.
Whoa.
It's worth a lot. There you go. So,
when we brought that cane up, if you go to my Facebook page or you look on TSN, the story's still up. It's called, I believe it's called Raising Cane.
Exactly.
During CFL, but you see the whole story. You see me doing the auctioning and stuff. That's neither here nor there. But it was brought up in a box, cloth lined, a wooden box, cloth lined, burnt into the outside. It said, Cap Mosca fight of the century. and then you open it up, and inside the silk lined box was the BC logo, the Ticat logo, the date and time. The cane is inlaid in this in silk, and
wow.
We auctioned it off, and I was amazed because it went for $7,000. And then we did a helmet where all the CFL alumni were there, like from Russ Jackson to Pinball Clemens to, I mean, you name it, they were there, to Ange. And they all signed it. That went for another $4,000. And then the Box J Boys, we did a 50-50. Leo asked us to help. And we got another, like, $2,000. So in a short amount of time, plus there was a memorabilia auction. So it really helped the Dire Needs Fund of the CFL alumni. It was a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
So, Jared, now that you're on, I wanted to ask you, there's a quarterback on your team that I was a big fan of in college, and I think you know who I'm talking about, in Jeremiah Masoli. Now, what are your thoughts on him? Because I know you like LeFevre, but just as a long-term, because it's going to happen soon enough. Burris is going to be done in about a year or two. So who are you looking at as maybe the next guy?
I haven't seen Masoli play a lot, so I'm not going to – I can't speculate. I want to let's see him get some reps under fire, because LeFevre's going in. His play package is getting bigger and bigger, and I see what Austin's doing.
Yeah.
He's gaming him up, so he's getting him used to our game, right? And at the same time, if Burris goes down, he can go in. But you really liked Masoli's his name, right?
Yeah.
Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, Masoli. Yeah,
Masoli.
And, you know, because obviously his connections with Ken Austin and Ole Miss, but no, I actually watched him in the preseason against Montreal. And the big thing, and I noticed in that game, was how Ken Austin was reacting to what he did. Like, there was one play that stood out where he basically stayed in the pocket and held onto the ball to let the receiver get open, completed the pass, but took a massive hit. And if he hadn't, you know, had he not stayed back and took that hit, the play wouldn't have happened. And I just remember him going to the sideline and Ken Austin just totally pointing that out, like, way to take that hit to make the play. And when you see him run the zone read, and I just feel like that kid has the potential to be just an absolute star in this league, because he's got all the tools. I mean, he's got the speed, mobility, great arm. He's played in big games in college, and he's obviously played under Ken Austin, and he knows his system going back to Ole Miss. And I just think that he's a little diamond in the rough that – people may not be aware of now, but in a year or two, I think he's going to hit the scene and just explode, and people are going to be like, where'd this guy come from? And
he's being groomed by a player's coach, right?
Yeah.
Who was a former coach, a winning coach, a winning quarterback in this league. So if anyone can get someone ready to play their top game in our game, it's Ken Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, so I'll keep an eye on him, and I mean, because I'm not one of those guys that blows smoke out of their ass. Like, I'm not going to speculate on someone I haven't seen, but if you're high on him, I'm definitely going to take a look at him, because I have much respect for your knowledge and and the way you follow the game. So
the thing that really got to me about the Ticats in 2006 is we had Jason Moss as the starting quarterback.
Oh, no.
We had Kevin Eakin as the backup.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
And we had Richie Williams as the third-string quarterback.
Yeah.
Ouch.
To me, in my days in Hamilton, Richie Williams was better than both of them put together.
And wow. you know why he lost his mojo?
Who's that?
His sidearm delivery. Soon as the linemen picked up on it, all they had to do was lift their hands up to block the ball.
Wow.
That's why, as soon as they picked up on that, he was getting, I would say, 50% or more of his passes blocked by the linemen. Blocked or intercepted.
How tall was he?
He was 6'2".
Yeah. You can't do that unless you're at least 6'5" or taller.
Yeah.
That whole
He did more of a. It wasn't even like a baseball throw where the elbow led and he went over his head. It was, if you look at pictures, his arm is almost fully extended out sideways. I mean, he could rip the ball, but.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he played for App State, and he played some wild games for App State. But, yeah, his sidearm delivery. Richie was great.
Yeah,
and he's doing great in NASCAR now. He's a pit crew guy for NASCAR.
Yeah, I was reading that on Facebook, because I have him as a friend on one of my Facebooks. And I'm like, yo, Rich, what's going on, bro? He's like, yo, little pistol, what's up? And I'm like, cool, man.
Yeah. No, they're... Yeah, we had an interesting crop there, but you know, there's, I don't know, I'm really optimistic that right now, you know, not only our team but the whole frickin' league, there's something happening.
There must be.
No. Yeah.
Well, they
because,
must be,
you know,
because it has to be happening, because it seems to me the quarterbacks are taking more chances, and the coaches wouldn't let them do it if they thought there was nobody or nothing in the cupboard to cover if they do something wrong, because this year has been notorious for the quarterbacks. You know, the hook slide, usually about 90% of the time, 95% of the time, maybe a desperate situation, you had a quarterback that gets tackled not doing a hook slide. But this year, how many quarterbacks are going for that extra couple of yards and, you know, trying to make the sideline, blah, 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 all that wonderful stuff.
And
it turns out with those injuries that happened and the quarterbacks that have been disabled, obviously the coaches were aware that there were quarterbacks right behind them that could do the job.
Yeah, the kitchen's getting hot, man. These guys are feeling the heat. Like Henry Burris, you know, he can feel what, you know, what's coming from behind. He knows Dan LeFevre is right there, and Ken Austin, like to his point, was definitely feeling, you know, the likes what the guy has, and we know how Burris is. You know, he has a bad game. You know, bad Hank shows up, throws a couple picks. I don't think Ken Austin's going to hesitate to pull the hook and just switch it up and go with LeFevre. Is that how you say his name? LeFevre?
Yeah, LeFevre.
LeFevre.
LeFevre for
LeFevre.
LeFevre. Yeah, exactly. Even in Toronto, I mean, you know, Ricky Ray's, you know, done a lot, but, I mean.
Ricky Ray's days are done.
He started.
Okay, I wouldn't go that far. It's not done. But, you know, the Argos, like, you look around the league, now teams feel comfortable because they feel like for the first time, and to your point earlier, guys, is there's finally depth at quarterback.
Yeah,
and that's
just
to me, and like you said, it just bodes so great for the future of the league. Not guys who are your prototypical statue pocket passers. We're talking about exciting guys who can make plays, you know, get the popcorn popping. It's like what I like to say, guys who can, you know, be exciting, be worth watching. Like Zach Caleros, to me, that's a guy I would want to pay a ticket and be willing to watch. I'd rather watch him any day of the week than Ricky Ray in his 5-yard dump pass. I'm sorry. I just have to be honest.
Yeah.
And
they've got – the quarterbacks have vision.
Yeah.
They're dynamic. You know, they're not a one-trick pony. And I agree. They're not a – we don't have a bunch of pocket passers here. They're bringing in scramblers, right? Like, and that we need that in our game. That's part of our game. We've got a big frickin' field.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
yeah, we've got a big field, and we've got to make yardage each down.
You know what else I think has really impacted this, guys? And you could tell me if you think I'm right, but this is only – this is out of my butt, but – with the new TSN television contract, each team is getting their salary paid.
Yeah.
Right? Each team is getting, what is it, $4.58 million.
Exactly.
Each team is getting that.
Yeah.
Right? So
yep.
ticket sales, everything else is gravy on the taters. It's kind of like the NFL, but way smaller. Because the NFL, even before a player steps on the field or a jersey sold or a beer sold in the stands, they get $110 million, each team.
Yep, exactly.
Because of television, right? Yep. So now the team doesn't have to worry about playing their players. Now they can focus on marketing the team.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so I think marketing across the board is, it's outside of Toronto, the CFL is cool. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's cool in every city it's at. Like, BC's getting good. Every team is getting good crowds.
Yeah.
So, you know, my point being, I think the influx of money from the television revenue, you're seeing a better quality of football just because more money can be spent on the little things.
Yep, and the little things always go a long way. Like, I really like the fact that they came out with the new uniforms last year and continuing that this year. I mean, and then when you see the new stadiums now to – you know, what you guys, the people you guys brought up earlier, the naysayers in Canada, you know, I just say when they tune in now, they're not going to see the same old rinky-dink operation that the CFL was for the last 20 years.
They're going to tune in,
they're going to see beautiful new state-of-the-art facilities, they're going to see players, you know, teams having nice uniforms, having good quality players on the field, teams be, for the first time all being financially stable. I mean, when is the last time we could ever say that about the CFL? Every team being in the black, you know, financially.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Toronto, of all teams. So it's like, you know, if you look around all of the sport leagues, like you said, other than the NFL, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA, those leagues, they have none of them come close to being able to distribute TV revenue to cover the player salaries. They don't even come within half. So for the CFL to achieve this, this is a huge landmark. And, guys, this is a turning point for the league. I'm telling you, once this comes through, you're going to hear all these rumors and new owners trying to get in the league and start teams, whether it be in the Maritimes, Quebec City, all over, because now guys know if you come in, you're going to be dealing with a profitable business in your hands. You can make $1 million, $2 million a year if you run it successfully. So the CFL is great, man. I'm so happy about what's going on. And
I totally agree. And one example was that was when I turned on the BC game when they had the black uniforms. And I was, WTF is this, man? Because, but there you are in a brand-new stadium with these dynamic stealth fighters playing the game, right?
Yeah.
I just loved it. It was
awesome. Let me interrupt the conversation for a moment to remind everybody they're listening to Candid Frank Live. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can call 714-242-5250, or you can message me on Facebook like Rob did, and that's at Candid Frank Live. Stanishi, message me. If you don't want to call the LA number, we'll call you. You can leave me your number as Rob did, and I'll call you and get you involved in the conversation. I think there's another upside, gentlemen, to the money that arrived, you know, with the contract with TSN. Part of the problem with building a new stadium is you have to have some sort of equity, and I believe that money can be used as equity and as basically a way to convince whoever they have to get the money from to build a stadium here in Toronto that it's a viable league and it is profitable. And even though the stadium's not full, still, as you said, Jarrett, there's money on the table and money that the Argos can use, and they're not a losing proposition, if you will.
No, they're not. And, you know, as much as I loathe the Toronto mayor, and I did say loathe. I can't use any other acronyms on this show right now.
Not for now.
You know, he's advocating for a stadium for the team. A more appropriate stadium, you know, a 30,000-seat, 20,000-seat stadium. I'd like to see a 30,000-seat stadium for Toronto because I think you'd sell it out once you had it. But, guys, my phone is dying. I just want to say thank you for having me on again. Great talking to you two guys. Hope to have you up next year for a tailgate. And be well. And anyone listening going to Moncton, stop into the old Triangle Friday night and help support the Moncton Cancer Center.
And hopefully you come watch your Ottawa Redblacks win some games.
Two games next season. I'll be there.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, be well, guys.
Thanks for talking to Jake. Take care, bud.
Okay, take care,
okay, bye. On that note, guys, I got to finish what I promised I would do. And I got to finish a couple of things that we were doing earlier. And I really appreciate your phone calls. And I hope you take the time Rob to call again. You're more than welcome on the program. And Mike, you know how I feel about you. So, you know,
all right,
it's all been good, guys. Now, in closing, is there anything you want to go out with? Anything you want to promote or anything you want to say? Give you 30 seconds each before you go.
Mike? Just come watch brand new Ottawa Red Blacks in the brand new Lansdowne Park and come cheer on your new CFL team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I just want to say to Rob, too, the show's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, so whenever
feel
free to call.
What's the link on the internet in that?
You're a friend on my Facebook, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm on your name right now.
Right.
And I
always post the link, but you don't need to wait for the link. What you can do is you can go to Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's right. And then you type in Candid Frank Live and I'll come up. The network is Blog Talk Radio. The name of the show is Candid Frank Live, and you can pick it up going through Blog Talk Radio. In fact, if you just Google Candid Frank Live, it'll take you to all the shows that I've done.
Oh, okay.
All right?
Okay.
So I'm really pleased to have a Red Black fan. I said 30 seconds, but give me a quick 20 seconds on the name. How easy was it for you to feel comfortable with the name?
Well, you know, at first I was kind of like the Red Blacks. I'm like, that's kind of crazy, you know? And then I just sat back and I thought about it. I said, well, you know what? They're the same colors as we had with the Rough Riders. We have an R on the side of our helmets, even though it's like a razor blade thing, but it's still the R. So you know what? And, you know, I told all my friends on Facebook and that they're all like, oh, we don't like these Red Blacks. I said, just wait until we start the season. You'll fall in love with them. You'll be like, oh, my God, CFL's back. CFL's back. Yay, yay. And that's the only thing I look at it, you know. I give it to Jeff Hunt and his owners to throw their money in or whatever to bring a team back here to Ottawa, you know.
Well, that's
awesome.
And you know
it's going to last because Jeff Hunt had the 67s for a while, you know.
Yep.
So.
It's a good plan. You have a good owner, and really that's the only reason why Ottawa doesn't have a team today is because you went through a couple of bad owners.
Yeah, like with the Gliebermans and then Horn.
There you go.
And Firestone.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Take care, eh? Nice talking to you, Mike.
Yep, nice talking to you, too.
Okay, bye.
All right, Mike. You want to throw out your web page, your blog page?
Yeah, truecflfan.blogspot.com. And I just want to thank you once again, Frank, for a great show and just for giving us CFL fans all around the world a platform to share our thoughts. And just a great show, and just keep it up. And I guess that's all. Thank you.
No, I thank you, Mike, and you're always welcome.
All right.
Talk to you later, buddy.
Yeah, talk to you later. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, so we'll move on now to, as promised, let's see now, where was I before a conversation broke out in football, which, you know, I don't mind. I don't mind a conversation about football. So, okay, so we were gonna talk to, let's see, the Tim Hortons owner, I think is where I was at. Remind you, you're listening to Candid Frank Live here on Blog Talk Radio. If you'd like to call and you have a comment about the supportive nature of the Canadian Football League, you're more than welcome to give us a call. But more importantly, right now we're going to talk about specifically part three, I guess we're at now. This is the I'm trying to find it. Now it's not here. Let's see. I got to look here. Okay, zero. There we go. I knew I'd find it somehow. This is the owner of actually, you know what? It's the coach. We're going to go with the coach. Not the owner. We did the coach. So the owner of Tim Hortons that helped support.
The Toronto school owners are involved in the level of playing field program. So Runnymede is going to be a local team to some of the school owners.
And what motivated you guys to do this?
Well, it's a great program because it's not just about the sports. It's about everything else that happens with the school spirit. You know, schools that have football teams have a greater level of school spirit, greater motivation, absenteeism has gone down in schools that have football teams. And the average scores on tests, for example, are better, or greater, because everybody feels like a part of the school now. Schools that don't have sports, schools that don't have football teams, you can see that just the spirit just isn't there. So it's not just about the sport; it's what it does to the overall school, and that fits in perfectly with Tim Hortons in a way that we think in the community, and that's why we're involved in the initiative.
Thank you.
Now, so it's Runnymede Ravens, who used to be the Redmen, if you remember the high school, and they finally have football back. And for those of you that ever played high school football, you will remember the Runnymede Redmen. And you have the opportunity now to support and or back up the Runnymede Ravens, and that's the new name of the school. So, yes. I believe the Redmen, the name disappeared. It was changed for obvious reasons, which, in case you don't know, has to do also with the Redskins in Washington, why people want to change an insensitive name like the Redskins at this point in our social development, if you will. That's as much as I guess I can say about that. Now, the White Ribbon Campaign, as I said earlier, is all about it started in BC, and owner Mr. Braley brought it here to Toronto to basically he believed this was a great idea, and of course the Argos, as usual, bought into it. And here's some sound bites from that.
I'm with Todd Meinerson, executive director of the White Ribbon Campaign. Congratulations on the connection with the Toronto Argonauts. Please explain for my listeners what your program is all about.
Sure, thanks, Frank. We're working with the Argos and through the funding of Status of Women to add some work around gender-based violence and violence against women and girls to the already incredibly successful Huddle Up program that the Toronto Argonauts have run for the past 12 years. And our plan is to be able to talk to young men and boys in schools about healthy relationships with women, gender equality, respect, preventing violence, giving boys the space to ask those questions and to figure those things out so that they set themselves on a path for the future that's going to be violence-free and respectful to all people.
My biggest issue with violence, whether it's against women, men, boys, girls, doesn't matter, is secrecy.
That's
right. Seems to be the biggest hurdle that a person has to overcome before the good things can start to happen or the bad things can stop.
Yeah, I think you're right on. I mean, one of the things, the core elements of our pledge at White Ribbon is to never commit, condone, or remain silent about violence against women. That means speaking up about it. That means speaking up if you've experienced it. That means breaking that stigma around that we don't talk about it, that it doesn't happen. And that's the way that we can get boys to do stuff about it, because when they see it happening, they speak up. It doesn't become acceptable anymore. It doesn't become tolerable. And that's a huge part of the work that's going to happen.
I guess another question is, sometimes people think something's funny because it's happening to someone else. Should we check when we see an interaction between people, whether it be boys and girls, men and women, children and adults, and people see something that isn't right but think it's funny? Should people diagnose what if it's really funny for everyone?
Right, right. Humor often is like a coping mechanism for what we do when we don't know how to intervene or be a bystander in a situation. And it's also a way to kind of mask the seriousness by the perpetrator. Oh, we're just joking. It was only just in fun. But when we teach young men and women that, no, it's not fun, it hurts people, it has an impact, and here's some things that you can do to intervene and say it's not funny, it can have a huge impact. Like, I play hockey, I'm in my locker room, I just started this job at White Ribbon. A guy makes an inappropriate joke about rape, about a woman. I'm like, I got to say something, but I'm terrified. And I could feel the redness coming up from my toes, and I didn't want to kicked off the team or get ostracized by these guys. I said something eloquent like, hey, that's not very funny. I hid my head. The joke stopped, but the more interesting thing that happened afterwards was three guys after the game approached me in the parking lot and said, I'm glad you said something, because I didn't think it was funny either, but I didn't know what to say.
Now, just as many would say, who the heck do you think you are?
Yeah.
So that's the problem. But the important thing is the three that acknowledged it. It's a building process, isn't it? Foundation. It's foundational.
And I think more and more we uncover that there are guys that are uncomfortable with that. And when somebody speaks out, tells them that it's okay to do that, shows them that it's a way that's not as threatening, and it sets a new tone, a new norm in that group.
thank you for taking the time to talk to
me. You got it.
Mr. Meinerson, White Ribbon Campaign, Toronto Argonauts, a great connection, and I'm happy for you. This must be a wonderful day for you.
Thanks very much. Come back and check with us, and we got the program up and running, and we'll tell you how it's going.
Well, we'll...
Yeah, it'll be up and running, and it is one of the programs that that basically is an important part of, you know, everything that is safety for women. And I know the White Ribbon Campaign is more about women, but still, violence against people, it all interrelates, and it all needs the same kind of attention and the same kind of support. So, you know, it's something for all of us to work on. It's not something that is easy. Now, we're going to take a break from the White Ribbon Campaign only because I had a problem with loading it. We're going to go to Matt Black, Scott Milanovic, and we'll start with, we'll start with tackles for toilets. Let's see. As funny as that sounds... it is a real thing, and I'm looking here to see if it made it on. It doesn't look like it did as well. It didn't come on as well. Well, that's just terrible, don't you think? I think it's terrible. Hang on. Gonna have to shoot the producer. Maybe that's what I have to do. Shoot the producer that did this. It's all good, man. 13. Whoa, that is amazing. All right. Well, you know what? Let's go with a. I don't want to pay that. I don't want to play that. If I play that, that'd just be too funny. Okay. We'll put this on for a sec.
I'm Quincy Hart, and I started I Believe in Me because I saw there was a need for us to believe in ourselves more than life teaches us to believe in ourselves. People believe in negative statistics, therefore they become statistics. Elementary school students and middle school students are failing and not passing their tests. High school students are dropping out at an alarming rate. The unemployment rate is at an all-time high. With self-belief, self-confidence, and an overall positive self-image, we can fix a lot of these problems that we're facing. With the positive self-image, that elementary school student and that middle school student will succeed in class and be promoted to high school. That high school student will complete high school and graduate from college. That individual that's unemployed will find a job or create work for themselves. I believe in me, therefore I have the confidence to believe in you. I believe that you will help me fulfill my desires according to the younger generation. They label Generation X. Teach them the self-confidence they need to become Generation Excellent. I believe in me. I believe in you. Join me on this mission.
And that's the biggest thing and most important thing that one has to remember. It's all about believing. And as I said, part of the thing is believing that we can make a difference, and I do believe we can make a difference. And I spoke to the MP in our local community here, Stella Ambler, and this is how our conversation went.
Stella Ambler, you're MP for
Mississauga
South. That's right. Okay, I'm with Stella Ambler. He is the MPP for Mississauga South. Stella, wow. I mean, this must be wonderful to be able to be a part of this. Where as a woman. Growing up, I'm sure things have changed over the years. What other kind of changes are we looking for, the next stage, where women get the kind of respect in many ways that they deserve that they don't get?
You know, I'm so pleased to be here because on so many levels, I'm a mother of two teenagers. This kind of thing really hits home for me. I'm also a member of the Parliamentary Standing Committee on the Status of Women in Ottawa, so I've been on that committee for 2 years. So I've had the pleasure of working with the previous Minister for the Status of Women, as well as Minister Kelly Leach, Dr. Kelly Leach, our new minister. I am so pleased. Kelly and I have known each other for 25 years or so. And, yeah, we were involved. We met in university. And you know, to see her up there today announcing $600,000 worth of funding to help combat violence against women and girls in the GTA is just, I tell you, I got shivers. I'm so excited about this program, the Huddle Up and Make a Call program. I can't imagine having better partners. We've got the Toronto Argonauts Football Club solidly behind this. The players, the owners, the administration, everyone is here today. Oh, what a fantastic announcement. I don't get to do these every day, so this is very exciting. Our other partner is, of course, the White Ribbon Campaign. They work in Canada to combat violence against women and girls, as well as 65 countries around the world. They do such good work. And, you know, it is just the perfect intersection of organizations and partners that can help solve this terrible, terrible, terrible problem that affects far too many women in our society.
I think you forgot. I don't think you met in university. I think you met in a playpen.
You're right. That's where we were 25 years ago.
In a playpen.
Silly me. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Everybody deserves a little fluffing up now and then. Well, now here's where I get to fluff up.
Okay.
I really do appreciate the work that you're doing. I appreciate the work that the White Ribbon Campaign is doing. Personally, it's something that as a small guy growing up, I don't need to tell you what that meant, is that if there was ever a disagreement, your face was in the grass. In fact, I went to a reunion just a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and in fact, one guy even remembered me, and he said, oh, aren't you the guy who loved eating grass?
Oh.
This is why I take it personally. I've seen how it works, and I understand about the secrecy, but more importantly, the advanced work that you do, it's the people who basically don't understand or don't care. Complacency. How do you deal with that, with people that sit on the sidelines while they could actually do something?
You know, that was a question that was asked earlier, and Todd from the White Ribbon Campaign answered it, I think, really well. Awareness enables people to speak out. Speak up, speak out, speak against. And that's the best weapon we have. Maybe not the only weapon, but absolutely the best defense we have against bullying, because when the bulliers and know that they're going to be called out on it, when they're not operating in that vacuum, when they're not operating with that shroud of secrecy and silence around them, they're no longer protected, and they're not going to be able to get away with the horrible things that they're doing. I was just talking to a couple here just 5 minutes ago whose daughter, a very intelligent, beautiful young woman, teenager, from a good family, lives in a good neighborhood. You know, her parents, she was a victim of bullying, in particular cyberbullying on Facebook. And her parents said they had no idea this was happening until she started cutting herself, and they lifted up her sleeve one day. She was wearing long sleeves. She had started wearing long sleeves to cover it up. She was hurting herself because she was in such pain, you know, and to see the pain in their faces, that their daughter would have to go through something like that, you know, the fact that they're here today, that they're willing to tell the story, that child got through it, thank God, and that she's willing to talk about it, helps other children, other young women. You know, violence is something that if we lift off that veil of secrecy, that's the best thing we can do for the victims and for the survivors, because that's what we have to do. We have to make it okay to talk about it. Just yesterday there was a story on the news, and I was at home making dinner, and my 14-year-old son was watching the news. It was a story about the Dr. Phil tweet. And Rehtaeh Parsons' father weighed in on the issue. And this was a news story, and my son asked a question. I go, what's this about? It started a conversation in our household, two teenagers, two parents, about this issue. And, you know, to me, that's what it's all about, raising the awareness. So this was my 14-year-old asking questions, and people talking about it. If we can get people talking about it, then all of a sudden, it's not something that the perpetrators are going to be less likely to get away with it. And I think that's really the secret. That's really what we're trying to do here today.
Well, I appreciate that the government of Ontario is
Canada.
I think it's a national issue.
Absolutely.
But I'm glad that they're showing less complacency by getting you involved in this program.
Indeed. I'm so happy to be here and so happy to be involved in such a great initiative. Thank you, Frank, for your support.
My pleasure. Okay. My pleasure, Stella. Thank you.
That was fun.
Yes, thank you.
Nothing better than entertaining a politician. She's a lovely lady. She truly is. Looks like she's still 16. Lovely leader. Member of the Conservative Party. This is one time when it doesn't matter whether you're Liberal, Conservative, or NDP. Anytime we're doing things like this, this is what you have to do, and you should support it. And I feel it's very important to talk about this on the program. Here's Joe Appel giving his two cents. Remember, Joe does his bullying program around schools.
You know, it's great. It's exciting to see the team progress in the work we do in the community. I myself do a lot of work outside of what the Argos do as well, and it's exciting to see the government and everybody deciding to go in the same direction and work together. The thing that I started to realize is because I had been the victim of bullying at first, I started to see the look in other people's eyes that I knew that I knew that they were feeling what I had used to feel. And then fortunately at the same time I was finding a new identity through sports and becoming successful with that. So I had the confidence level that I never had before, and I didn't feel like I needed to go try and chase new ways to get that confidence. And eventually I felt comfortable enough to remove myself from that situation, and then slowly over the years get to the point where now I can go out and actively prevent others from taking the same paths that I chose, and hopefully help people avoid making those same decisions.
This is going to be another one of those times where our program goes over, and live you may not be able to listen to the whole show, but it's important that I complete the thought that I started earlier. But, of course, I fall in love with talking to fellow CFL fans about the CFL, about anything, so therefore we sort of the middle of the program got a little bit too chubby, if you will, and it didn't leave enough room for the end of the program. But we're going to play this, and later, once this program gets put in the can, you'll be able to listen to the rest of the program. And I apologize for having to do it this way, but it's very important that I continue this tonight. And it is Tackle for Toilets. Jason Pottinger, as funny as this sounds to begin with, the reality is that, as you know, Pinball Clemens collects money and opens schools in Africa. Well, some of the schools are open, but now they don't have latrines that meet a certain standard that allows the school to remain open. This program involves getting those latrines in good shape, acceptable shape, so that the schools can remain open.
Okay, I'm with Jason Pottinger, and in Kenya there are some places that let's just say, not only clean drinking water, but basically cleanliness is a real difficulty. And you're part of a program. Please explain to us Tackles for Toilets.
Yeah, so Tackles for Toilets, it's in support of Connecting Countries, Adopt a School, which is based out of Hamilton. The charity president, John Smith, and I are quite close. And basically what Connecting Countries does is they build new latrines at grade schools in Kenya to keep the schools open and keep the kids in school. Without the new latrines, the schools are deemed unsanitary, unsafe, and the schools are shut down and the kids just don't go to school. So, Tackles for Toilets is basically an event, one-day event, once a year. It's the third annual this year, where, you know, we get a bunch of people to come out to an Argos game. They pay for the ticket. A portion of the ticket sales goes towards the new construction of the latrines in Kenya. In addition to that, we formed a partnership with Boys to Men, the TDSB, Toronto District School Board Boys to Men Club, which is a group for underprivileged youth. If people can't make the game, they can donate their ticket, send an underprivileged Toronto youth to the game, plus that money still goes towards building latrines in Kenya. And, of course, you know, everyone that buys a ticket, they get a tax receipt, and they're entered in a draw for cool prizes like tickets to a Broadway show downtown Toronto, plus a dinner, or you know, $150 to CN Tower, which you can use at the restaurant there, the rotating restaurant. So it's a win-win-win for everybody. Everyone has fun. The Argos kick some butt, and you know, kids are living a better life.
The game is October 4th, right?
Yeah, October 4th.
Yeah,
Hamilton.
Yeah,
which makes sense. We make sure it's against Hamilton every year because it's a Hamilton-based charity. And half the people that come are Ticats fans. So it's a good mixed crowd.
Oh, good. So it's really a Southern Ontario QEW thing.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Now, when you guys do these kinds of charitable things, you guys do a lot of them. How mm-hmm. satisfying is it for you? I know we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But what drew you to this particular? It almost seems like an extension of the guy, the president, number 31.
It is.
He builds the school. You make sure they stay open.
He builds the latrines. I mean, he knows where every cent goes,
yeah.
And that's what I love about this. Is he is so intertwined in this charity. He literally oversees where every single cent goes. There's no money lost. You know what I mean? Which is great. And so that's comforting. And you know what? Basically, I got involved because John Smith is a great guy. He's a retired teacher in Hamilton. And I met him at McMaster University, my alma mater, and got to know him quite well. And, you know, one day he said, come on out, help us out. And I did. And that was about 4 or 5 years ago. And I haven't looked back since. Love it.
Real quick, October 4th. If you buy tickets,
mm-hmm.
A portion of it goes to charity.
Yep.
You're entered into a lottery that basically allows you an opportunity to win maybe tickets to a Broadway show.
Yep.
And you're doing good for kids in Africa who
exactly.
want to have their schools to stay open. And if this doesn't work or happen, their schools could schools. There you go. See, Freudian
yeah.
slip. Their schools could close.
Yeah. Their, or their stools,
or their stools.
End up.
oh man!
Who knows
that
where?
Was a, that
but,
was a terrible,
yeah.
terrible Freudian
Whoops.
Slip.
but yeah, you can go to connectingcountries.net. That's connectingcountries.net for more information, or send me an email, pottingerj@hotmail.com. Last name, first initial @hotmail.com.
There you go.
Yep.
3, 2, 1. Okay. I'm with Jason Pottinger, and you know, football players are known to have a lot of energy, and sometimes that energy, when things aren't going well, turns into anger. How do you control that anger? I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about the game in Montreal where you were on special teams, and you looked angry. You said, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Frank, I was angry.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a great quality for a team? You know, that's something that I spoke to Scott Milanovich about it. It's very important that the guys don't like losing.
Mm-hmm. No, you got to play angry. You got to play. I mean, you're having fun out there. When you make a great play, you smile about it and you have fun. But if you're not playing angry, especially on defense and special teams, you're not going to have the same aggression, right? I feel like aggression roots from being angry, having a chip on your shoulder, taking things personally, right? So that's what I try to do. I try to, you know, find things that make me angry and bring it on the field with me and take it out on the people in the opposite jerseys.
You had a great game, middle linebacker.
Thanks.
We're real happy about that. You made a grand total of maybe one mistake. That was about it.
Yep, a little offside there.
Offside.
Yeah. A little too aggressive.
Now, it's not your normal position, shall I say, every week.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it being prepared for that? How do you prepare for that opportunity? I mean, it's obvious you have to be ready.
I'm always prepared for that. You throw me in any second. I know every play. There's you know, just because I don't necessarily start there every week doesn't mean that I'm not paying attention on every snap. I'm not in my book just as much as everyone else. I'm not watching film just as much as everyone else. I mean, I approach every week like I'm going to be starting. Why wouldn't I?
No, absolutely.
Yep.
The game and the team have had, when I say the game, I mean football in general, CFL football right now.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been, I spoke to Scott, he seems to agree that there have been a lot more injuries this year than in past years,
mm-hmm.
at least in recent memory. Is it that way from your perspective?
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of been, there's been an unlucky run, not only on our team, but around the
Everywhere,
league.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know what, I think it might just be coincidence.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's just the way it goes. You know, I don't think it's anything in particular. I mean, the same turf has been around for however many years, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Guys have been just as fast, just as strong. I don't know. I don't see anything that's changed that's making more injuries. I think it's just coincidence.
I have a theory.
What's the theory?
A little tiny little theory. The fact that the games are being broadcast back to the United States has maybe raised the intensity level of the games for the guys. Because, I mean,
guys are always playing for the jobs.
Yeah,
you know,
that.
The guys are playing for paychecks. They're playing for their families. I don't think a simple televisation down in the States is going to motivate people more.
You don't think that they're putting on a little bit of a show for everyone back home?
I don't think so.
No?
I think guys have have always been playing.
It's just coincidence.
I think it's just coincidence. I think guys are always playing as hard as they can.
Well, then how about try this? Let's try this one on for size.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to swallow a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have him for lunch. Some quarterbacks over the years have used the hook slide all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Some quarterbacks, sometimes they see an opportunity to grab a couple extra yards.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hook slide.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. From my perspective, it seems to me like the quarterbacks this year, guys like Lule, Edmonton.
Riley. Yep.
They seem to, and your own guy, Kolaros,
mm-hmm.
they like to carry the ball. Is that not possibly a dangerous situation? Do you think maybe quarterbacks are taking too many risks right now in the CFL?
Yep, they are, but you know what? I don't blame them. All these guys are young guys that are trying to prove their stuff. They're trying to prove not only that they have the skill, but they have the mentality to lead a team, right? And, I mean, if you're Mike Riley or Zach Kolaros, or a Marsh or Nice Winder, you know what I mean? Like, you want to be out there and you want to show your guys that you're willing to take a pounding for them, right? And, yeah, okay, you know, Ricky Ray and Calvillo and stuff like that, we're all going to get angry at them if they do that because we already know that they can lead us, right? We already know that. But the young guys, like, I like seeing it. I like seeing Zach go out there and lay his body on the line. That's cool to me. You know, it's the young guy that's trying to make a point.
Isn't it that thing about hating to lose?
Yes.
That sort of comes in there again.
Exactly.
Thank you, Jeff.
Exactly. No problem.
Say hi to Mom and Dad.
Will do.
And right. Good luck with it.
Yeah, so listen, thank you for your patience. I'm sorry we went past a little bit, grand total about 6 minutes. If you were cut off, it will be included in the repeat. Yes, it'll be in the archive. You'll be able to pull it up and the full show will be there. And that'll be the 2 hours and 6 or 7 minutes that the show will go on. I want to thank our guests today. Really feel fortunate that we had a new caller call in. And Rob Emery, I believe his name was. And Rob, thank you for being on the program. And he is a former ball boy or chief bottle washer for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And Jarrett Harris, of course, Mr. Hamilton Tiger Cats, at least on this program, one of the Box J boys. We'll be seeing them in a couple of weeks when we go to their new home for this year and only this year. That is when the Argos go to visit the Hamilton Tiger Cats in a couple of weeks. And, of course, Mike, the Minnesotan, our American guy that takes the CFL game directly to heart. The Argos played one bad game this year, and he was livid, couldn't stand watching the game. He was upset because he's telling everybody back home how great the CFL is, and then the Argos played a turkey. Well, you know what? They bounced back, and now they're first in the East, and they're in a good position in the East. This week they go 2 weeks in a row, if you can imagine, playing two different teams, both teams in first in the West. Now, after playing Saskatchewan and Saskatchewan losing, they were no longer in first after the Argos took care of them. Maybe the same thing will be true this week. If you're an Argo fan, I know that's what you're hoping. If you're a Calgary fan, maybe not so much. Actually, you don't just have to be a Calgary fan to hope Toronto doesn't win. I think there's 7 other teams right now this year. I mean, even the Red Blacks are probably in there going, lose Argos, we're coming into your division. Yeah, anyway, it was fun talking CFL, folks. Thank you for those of you that are listening, for those of you that are contributing, and, of course, for those of you that promote the program from time to time to let other people know it exists. The only way for you to know about this program is if somebody close to me told you it existed. And for that, I say thank you. Thanks for tuning in to Candid Frank Live, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 12 Eastern Standard Time. And that would be 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. if you want to take part and be a part of it live. Otherwise, Blog Talk Radio, Candid Frank Live. Even if you just Google Candid Frank Live, you'll be able to find the program. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you again next time.